The blizzard that slammed New England this weekend packed hurricane-force winds and dumped as much as 3 feet of snow in places. Despite progress, NSTAR is reporting that 85,000 people in southeastern Massachusetts remain without electricity and power may not be fully restored until Thursday. Restoring damaged coastlines will take even longer, if it happens at all. Nantucket, the Outer Cape, and the east-facing coasts of Massachusetts were hit with 20 to 30-foot waves on top of a 4-foot storm surge, and that on top of already astronomically high tides. The result was extensive coastal flooding and erosion. We'll be checking in with experts and observers around the region, but we also want to hear from you, particularly if you're near the coast. Have you seen flooding? How impacted are the beaches near you? You can give us a call at 866-999-4626. You can email us your stories and your photos at livinglabradio@wgbh.org, or you can find WCAI on Facebook or Twitter. Now, for the latest on the weather, we're going to turn to meteorologist Phil Burt. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
So tell us, this blizzard, just give us the recap. How much snow did we see, and what were the highest winds that we saw?
Well, really, throughout all of southern New England, the region was impacted. Highest totals over the interior were between 30 and 35 inches of snow, really pretty incredible. Here on the Cape, a general 10 to 20 inches, highest totals on the upper Cape up near the canal and just over the bridge. But most of the Cape was in the general 10 to 15 inch range. And as for highest winds, as you mentioned there in the opener, hurricane force gusts across the entire Cape. None of the area was spared that, and even up all the way up into Boston. There were hurricane-force wind gusts throughout the storm.
Well, of course, this is not the end of the unfortunate weather for this week. We're looking at some rain today and possibly another storm. What's the scoop on what we still have to come?
Yeah, today's weather system is fairly weak. It'll just be a little bit of light rain. There was a touch of light snow and ice earlier this morning, but that's already, temperatures are already into the mid-30s and will continue to rise through the day today. So really today will just be some rain, although I would watch for some areas of road flooding and things like that. Sometimes after these storms go by, we are left with clogged storm drains. You get a little bit of melting snow and a little bit of heavier rain. It's really easy for those typical spots that flood during a heavy rain event to flood during a light to moderate rain event, so I would watch for that. Tomorrow should be a pretty nice day, as should Wednesday. Seasonable temperatures just generally in the 30s and 40s, nothing too noteworthy. Thursday, there is going to be a storm coming off the mid-Atlantic heading out to sea. But it does want to try and pull closer to New England for a short time. Right now, it does look like the brunt of the storm will remain out at sea, but it's going to be really close, especially for us here on the Cape, as to whether that northwest shield of the storm can get over us. There are some computer models that want to take that very close to us and have put us under some heavier snow and wind. Right now, I don't really think that that's going to happen, but there's still several days away. And really, it's going to be a close call.
So what kind of snow accumulation might we be looking at later in the week?
Right now I really honestly wouldn't really be anticipating anything. I would, maybe a couple of inches of light snow. Should a closer track actually materialize, that would be a totally different story. Right now I don't think odds favor that, though, and I'm personally leaning towards a glancing blow, maybe some flurries, some light snow, maybe a couple of inches. That's what I'd be leaning towards right now, but, still a couple days out. So,
well, that's welcome news. Meteorologist Phil Burt, thank you so much for the update.
You're welcome. Anytime. Thank you.
Now, of course, one of the big stories of this storm has been the power outages caused by all of the wind and snow. Dan Tridel spoke with NSTAR spokesman Mike Durand earlier this morning, and he says that we are making progress on getting power back on.
The problem we faced originally is the storm on the Cape just really didn't want to end. It lingered a lot longer than in other areas. And between Cape Cod, the greater New Bedford area, the South Shore, that's where the most of our damage occurred. We actually restored power to over 100,000 customers since yesterday. We currently have about 87,000 customers without power still, so there's a long way to go, but we've made significant progress since yesterday.
As Mike Durand says, there's significant progress, but still a long way to go, and it could still be a few more days before we actually get power back on for everyone across the Cape and Islands.
Well, I think the main thing that I'd like to tell folks right now is that this will be a few more days. If you have power, if you are without power right now, it's not to say that you will be out until Thursday night, but there will be outages going through Thursday. So we always recommend, based on your own personal situation, plan accordingly and do what you need to do to be safe.
Obviously, we're trying to keep hope everyone is staying safe and warm, even without power. And there are four shelters currently open on the Cape. We spoke with someone at the Dennis Yarmouth shelter earlier this morning, and he said that things there are fairly hectic and busy, although the numbers are down from yesterday as power is beginning to be restored. We've also got Sean Corcoran, our reporter, who's currently at the Sandwich shelter, checking in from there. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Heather.
Sean, what's the situation there? How are people feeling?
Well, it's a waiting game here, obviously. They had about 30 people here last night, plus pets, and they're trying to get folks home. So what our folks are doing is they're calling their homes to see if the answering machine picks up. Apparently that's an indication that the electricity is on. And so then they got to transport these people to their homes, the logistical situation with that. And then they want to find out, make sure they can go get into the house itself. Some of these folks have been in shelters for the past few nights. And also they want to make sure that there haven't been any pipes that have broken. So we had about 30 people here last night, and when people arrive, they get a cot, pad, blankets, a comfort kit with like a face cloth and some toothbrush, some soap. They're served meals. This morning for breakfast was muffins and cereal. So now they're thinking about, okay, we have rain coming, and I'm sure you just discussed that, and what will that mean for roofs that have lots of snow on it? So they're encouraging folks to also take care of that when they get out of the shelter and get home if they can. I know there was a five-year-old here last night. We had older folks as well as families. There was a five-year-old here. She was a little concerned, I've been told, about sleeping in a strange place, but she is now home and safe. Also, 2 days ago when the shelter was open on Saturday, they had to shut it down and transport the people from here to Falmouth shelter because they had a problem with the generator at Sandwich High School. That generator has been replaced by a larger generator from NSTAR, and so this shelter is operating well. If people can get back in their homes by 3 o'clock this afternoon, they'll shut the shelter down. But right now, they're just waiting to see what happens.
Sean, I know that there were some houses along the coastline in Sandwich that were undercut and flooded. Have you talked to anybody who had to evacuate because of that problem?
I haven't encountered anyone with that specific problem. It's basically been a general, we don't have power, we need a warm place to stay. There is a Red Cross shelter app that the Red Cross folks here have turned me on to, and you can get that at the App Store if you have access with your cell phone. And that tells us how many shelters are open, where they're open, and how many people are there. So there were 60, as of midnight last night, there were 61 people in Falmouth, 55 people in Nauset in shelters. Sandwich High School had about 33 here, and then Plymouth South High School, which is off Cape, they had 118 folks there.
Well, thanks for that update, Sean. And certainly, everyone, please try to stay safe. As Sean said, there's a great app where you can figure out where the nearest shelter is if you do indeed need to seek shelter. And again, as Sean mentioned, the governor has actually encouraged you, if you can safely do so, to try to clear snow off of the roof of your home or other buildings, because as that rain comes through today and then if that freezes, could make the snow on tops of buildings even heavier and make some of those roofs unsafe. But again, that's if you're able. And Vicki Merrick from our production partners, Atlantic Public Media, also called in with a safety tip and reminded everybody to check your tailpipe and make sure it's not clogged with snow, because that could make for a real danger if you are trying to get out on the roads. Now, we want to check in with some of our coastal observers. Greg Berman is a coastal processes specialist with Woods Hole Sea Grant and Cape Cod Cooperative Extension. He's also an observer for the State Emergency Management Assessment Team, and he's been checking out the Cape Cod Bay shorelines for the past couple of days. Greg, where are you this morning?
Good morning, Heather. I'm actually still at Town Beach in Sandwich. I just finished up a morning observation.
And what is the situation there? I've heard there are as many as five new breaks in Town Beach.
Yes, definitely. There's been some breaks in the dune system already. The entire coastline along here was already weakened by Sandy and that subsequent nor'easter. But the existing breach is much wider than it was, and there's also seven or eight new smaller ones that formed during this storm.
Now, Town Neck has a perennial problem with erosion. There are some structures meant to help protect the Cape Cod Canal that choke off some of the sand needed to protect that beach. And behind it, there's a major marsh system. What do all these new breaks mean for that marsh?
Well, during this storm, sand went over the dune and through these new breaks and covered some of that marsh. completely smothering it in some areas, which isn't necessarily a terrible thing by itself, as this is how a natural barrier beach migrates landward. But as there is a lot of built-up infrastructure landward of the marsh, there's not going to be as much room for that marsh to be able to migrate landward. So it's an overall reduction in the amount of marsh in the system.
Now, I know you were also in Dennis and Brewster over the weekend. You actually sent me some photos on Saturday of Cold Storage Beach that were pretty dramatic, with roads underwater, homes with flooded yards. So what is the situation there?
Yeah, I actually got out there for the 10 a.m. Saturday tide. We have a semi-diurnal system up in Cape Cod Bay, which means we get two high tides a day. That one Saturday morning was actually a foot and a half higher than the one Friday night. And it was about a foot and a half higher than just the average high tide. So we had that just due to the phase of the moon. And then you add that storm surge on top and the northerly winds pushing all that water up into Sisuit Harbor. It was completely over the bulkhead, and there were a 6-inch to a foot waves on the road itself.
Now, how big was the storm surge within Cape Cod Bay? I know on some of the outer Cape, I checked one of the buoys, and it said like 4 feet, actually, on Saturday morning.
Yeah, it's tough to tell along the Cape Cod Bay shoreline just because we don't have as many tide stations, but Boston had about that 4 foot, a little bit more than 4 foot storm surge. I would assume we had at least that much just because the northerly winds are going to stack it up even higher along the coastline.
Now, I know that the governor was in Sandwich over the weekend in his tour of some of the hardest hit coastal areas in the state. How does the information that you gather when you go out and do these observations, how does that feed into the state's plans for any recovery efforts?
Well, immediately at the height of the storm, or maybe even a little bit afterwards, myself and a variety of other observers are out making storm damage assessments. We then, as soon as we can, get online and submit reports for various areas that we know to be vulnerable to show the extent of the storm damage, at least in the rapid time frame. Then all these reports get uploaded to that bunker in Framingham that MEMA, CZM, and the governor were all tucked into that bunker. So it feeds information to them to be able to make critical management decisions, and also later for any kind of declaration.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your information there, Greg, and stay safe as you're traveling around checking out these beaches.
Will do. Thank you, Heather.
We also want to hear from you, particularly if you're near the coast. If you've seen flooding or have checked out the beaches near you, you can give us a call at 866-999-4626. You can email us at livinglabradio@wgbh.org, or you can find WCAI on Facebook or Twitter. We'd love to have your photos as well as your stories. Now we're going to turn to Mark Adams, who is the Geographic Information Specialist with Cape Cod National Seashore. Mark, how did you fare this weekend?
It was very dramatic and interesting. You know, the biggest part of the story is the Bluff Coast beaches from Eastham, Wellfleet, and Truro, where there was some pretty serious undercutting to the bluffs and leading to some, you know, really unsafe situations, but also a pulse of really dramatic change in where the shoreline is after all things settle out.
Yeah, I heard that as much as 20 feet had been lost from the bluffs, and I was very curious. I know that stairways down to the beach at Nauset Light and at Coast Guard Beach have definitely been impacted, but we don't really know what the situation is at Marconi, and I'll be curious to see what remains of that historic site.
Yeah, I haven't been to the site itself. The Marconi Beach stairway is closed as well. You know, I'm sure, I haven't been to the Marconi site, but, you know, a lot of those features, the remains of that site are right at the edge. So I'm sure we've lost 5 to 10 feet of that. And, you know, with the rain coming and with runoff from melting snow, it's a real active situation where, you know, waves have undercut the base of the bluffs, and whatever material is now cantilevered out over the coast is going to continue to move throughout the day and the days to come. So we haven't seen the total resulting change yet, but we will, you know, very soon.
Now, of course, one of the dramatic events was that there's now a new break in the dunes at Ballston Beach, right on that Truro province town border. There's at high tide, apparently seawater going straight through into the Pamet River, which at least technically makes Provincetown an island for the time being.
Yeah, really, in just an extremely technical sense, and it's fun to say that. Of course, there's a solid fill berm under Route 6 and where the Pamet River is in a culvert. But you're right, and that's maybe a 40-foot wide breach, probably more significant than anything that's happened since about 91, when the whole thing got blasted through. There's some concerns about that, but really, it is part of a natural, infrequent process, and it's from a standpoint of coastal geology and ecology, it's helpful to bring sand down to the backside of that barrier, and the barrier will heal eventually. But there are waves going straight through into the marsh and saltwater pooling in what's now a sort of unnaturally freshwater system, because the whole Pamet River would normally be an estuary. But it is freshwater vegetation, so the saltwater will be have some impact on the vegetation on the inside. But that breach is it's quite traumatic. There's been a lot of work in that dune locally to try and build it up with fencing and vegetation, and that kind of work is important. But nothing can stop the a storm that comes in at a high tide with this kind of surge.
Do you anticipate that there will be efforts to artificially rebuild that dune at Ballston Beach, or is it just going to be a matter of time to let Mother Nature take its course?
You know, I think we are in favor of Mother Nature in this case, and I'm sure the discussion will happen about some people will want us to address that, whether it should be closed. But, you know, certainly that's against the policy of the National Park Service, and there's really no benefit to closing it. Back when there was a road through from South Pamet to North Pamet, there were some infrastructure concerns. But at the moment, like I said, it's going to just move sand around in a way that's important for the cycle of that barrier. And there's plenty of sand moving along offshore in the littoral zone that's going to close that up in the months to come. So, what people will see is that gradually a berm will build there and the dune will build, and, we'll be back to kind of the same situation. That the form of that very beach of Ballston is a result of the natural conditions that are still going on. So nature will remake it.
Mark Adams is Geographic Information Specialist with the Cape Cod National Seashore. Thanks for that update, Mark.
Sure thing.
Josh Balling is on Nantucket. He's the general manager of Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. Josh, what's the situation on Nantucket? Josh, are you there?
I'm here.
What's the situation on Nantucket? I know you guys got some pretty high winds and some flooding right into downtown.
We did. I think despite that, we can safely say that we're probably in better shape than much of the Cape and the South Shore are right now. We're used to winds and high winds and flooding, but it was still pretty hairy on Saturday. They're talking about wind gusts in some parts of the island over 90 miles an hour. A official gust on top of the water tower in Pulpus was reported at about 94 miles an hour. We got a call this morning from a gentleman who said that he recorded a 99-mile-an-hour gust, and it was really the flooding, this storm, much as it was during Hurricane Sandy and the nor'easter immediately after. The water was knee-deep on Washington Street in front of the town pier and the town parking lot. It came all the way up Broad Street from the Steamship Authority, a good distance, Brant Point neighborhood, also just outside downtown, was largely impassable. On top of that, we had not nearly as much snow as the mainland got, but whiteout conditions prevailed for much of the day Saturday. The winds continued to blow in the 40 to 50 mile an hour range and really just whited everything out from downtown across the island. The driving ban was lifted for Nantucket about 1 o'clock, but the town officials still encouraged people to stay off the roads for much of the day Saturday because visibility was just atrocious out here.
What can you tell us? What do you know about the state of some of the outer beaches, the north and east-facing bluffs? What was the erosion situation there?
There has definitely been some erosion reported. Town officials, one of the things they're doing today in assessing the damage across the island is taking a look at those beaches. It understandably got second priority at the height of the storm while they were taking care of and monitoring the infrastructure downtown and the more more occupied areas of the island. But it looks like there has certainly been some significant erosion on the east end of the island. The north end seems to be fine, and Matakit, nothing has been reported yet that is particularly bad. But the Sankaty Head Beach and Tennis Club out on Hoyks Hollow on the east end of the island reported some of their fencing down and boardwalks. We've got some pictures of that on our website. The deck of a cabana went over the edge, but unlike Hurricane Sandy and the nor'easter that followed a week later, there have not been any reports of major structures going over. The biggest damage so far seems to be reported at the town pier, where the storm surge and the high tides knocked a lot of the boards loose on the pier and weakened some of the bolts, loosened them up. So the town has closed the town pier right now for all mariners. There's about a half a dozen scallop boats and one commercial fishing boat that had been using it during the winter. The floating piers nearby are open during daylight hours for scallopers, but anyone who uses the town pier, including some of the commercial fishing vessels that are out around Nantucket for days at a time, are being asked to find other locations. The Nantucket Boat Basin, just up the harbor, is a possibility there, but that the town pier is closed until those repairs can be effected.
On a lighter note, I know you'd written that as any time there's flooding and storm surge like this, there's the possibility of a scallop stranding event. Have people been out collecting scallops off the beaches?
They really haven't, certainly not to the degree that they did back again in the fall. I think a large part of that has to do with a couple of things. One, I don't know that there was a stranding of the magnitude that happened when you had several thousand bushels back in the fall. And two, the conditions were just really were really awful here on Saturday and even to some degree into yesterday, although not nearly as bad. We're not receiving any reports of the massive scallop pick that we had back in the fall. So people may be a little bit disappointed that they're not going to have as many tasty free shellfish on their plates this time around. But it's also good that it looks that most of the shellfish appeared to have remained in the water, and that'll be good for upcoming seasons.
Sounds like people probably had larger fish to fry, so to speak. Josh Balling of the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
Now, of course, the mainland of Massachusetts was also hit hard. Bill Sargent is an environmental author. He keeps tabs on coastal erosion issues on his Coastline Projects blog, and he joins us from Ipswich this morning. Bill, what's the situation in Ipswich?
Good morning, Heather. Actually, yesterday I drove up to Salisbury, and this was one of the areas that was hit the hardest. And it was like a scene out of War and Peace. You had to drive through about a foot of a slurry of sand and water. You almost were getting your car stuck. There was sand had been washed back from the beach all the way back for several blocks into the town. This was also a place where about 50 people had to be evacuated. There are a series of modest homes up on the dunes. They're only about 10 to 20 feet away from the high tide, and the waves were just breaking over those dunes and actually flooding right into people's living rooms. There was one woman who got trapped under their sliding glass door when a huge wave just knocked it down. She was under, you know, several feet of water plus the door. Her husband had to, you know, get the door off her, and then fortunately the National Guard was banging at the back of the door, and they were able to evacuate them. Several people had to be evacuated out of their homes from front-end loaders, and then were taken to shelters.
Yeah, I know that seems like almost a rogue wave situation. Do we know what actually happened? Because this was actually before the high tide on Saturday morning, and I think a lot of folks in Salisbury were really surprised, taken by surprise when the flooding did happen.
I'm actually a little bit dubious of that. I actually think what it was the storm surge with waves riding on top of the storm surge. So it could have been. I know it's been called a monster wave, but usually what happens is the storm surge comes in like a high tide, and just the water gets higher and higher and higher, and then the waves are riding on top of that. So it seems like it's a huge rogue wave, but I have a feeling it was the combination of both.
Now, tell us about Plum Island. I mean, this is a place that's been in the news a lot, got hit hard by Sandy, and you told me over the weekend that they'd lost something like 40 feet of sand.
Exactly. Again, it's a slightly different situation. You have a row of far more impressive houses, and then all over the beach, you see the remains of everything they've tried. There are jetties, there are groins, there are seawalls. There's huge rolls of sandbags, and nothing has worked. Actually, just before Hurricane Sandy, they actually did what's called beach scraping, where what they did is they scraped sand off of the low tide area and then built this this huge sand dune right up to the houses that was 40 feet thick. That was all washed away in the first high tide of Hurricane Sandy. The first 30 feet were washed away because it's the sand was very loose when you push it up that way. It hasn't been dampened down by the waves. So that was washed away, and then the next high tide came in and took another 10 feet of erosion. So actually the erosion, the rate of erosion increased because of the beach scraping. And a lot of the reports said that this would happen. I was actually surprised. I thought that just that amount of sand would slow things down. But you go up there now and you see, you know, people's stairs coming off of their porches are 40 feet in the air.
Well, and when we have all this kind of erosion, often it reveals what we didn't know was beneath the sand down here on the Cape on the National Seashore. Apparently, one stretch of beach, some old cedar swamp has been resurfaced by the erosion. And on Plum Island, it apparently revealed some old riprap that few people even knew was there.
Exactly. Old riprap and seawalls, some really massive pieces of concrete that had been put there. And they had been buried probably since about the 1930s. I think one of the really interesting things that has happened is that the entire Massachusetts coast has rolled over about, you know, 10 to 20 feet. So all of that sand that you see, you know, that had been on the beaches has been washed back. And in a place like Salisbury, you can see all the sand washed back into the streets. But that's pretty much true up and down the coast. In some places, it's more like 20 feet. They figure in Plum Island, they lost 20 feet of beach. In other places, it might be more like 10 feet. Some of that beach will grow back in the summer, but there will be a net loss. And that net loss is because of sea level rise.
Well, thank you so much for your thoughts and for the update from the North Shore. That's Bill Sargent, environmental author and author of the Coastlines Project blog. Obviously, we will continue following the story of this blizzard throughout the day. Currently, NSTAR says it could likely go into Thursday by the time power is restored to everyone. At this point, some 35,000 homes and businesses on Cape Cod are without power. Thousands more on the South Coast, Plymouth and Wareham. And as we've just been talking about, some extensive coastal flooding and coastal reworking. We'll keep you updated throughout the day with the latest weather and storm recovery information. Thanks for listening. This is Living Lab on the Point. I'm Heather Goldstone.